to the church at Galatia, brethren, I speak in terms of human relations. Even though it is only a man's covenant, yet when it has been ratified, no one sets it aside or adds conditions to it. Now the promises were spoken to Abraham and to his seed. He does not say, and to seeds, as referring to many, but rather to one, and to your seed, that is Christ. What I am saying is this: the law, which came 430 years later, does not invalidate a covenant previously ratified by God so as to nullify the promise. For if the inheritance is based on law, it is no longer based on a promise, but God has granted it to Abraham by means of a promise. Why the law then? It was added because of transgressions, having been ordained through angels by the agency of a mediator, until the seed should come to whom the promise had been made. Now mediator is not for one party only, whereas God is only one. Is the law then contrary to the promises of God? May it never be. For if a law had been given which was able to impart life, then righteousness would indeed have been based on law. But the Scripture has shut up all men under sin, that the promise by faith in Jesus Christ might be given to those who believe. You may be seated. The promise. It's a difficult passage of Scripture. In fact, in studying this passage of Scripture, I came across two different accounts that said that there are over 300 different interpretations of one of those verses in this Scripture, in this passage. As we look at it, we're going to look at the idea that though the promise and the law do not contradict one another, they are extremely different from one another. And we have to see that in order to live our life in freedom and in liberty in Jesus Christ. And that's what the book of Galatians is really talking about, is the idea of liberty, that we live in liberty in Jesus Christ. We know that, as we looked at in the very beginning of this, that the key verse of Galatians is chapter 5, verse 1, that it is for freedom that Christ has come to set us free. And so we are living in liberty. And that is the purpose, as we study through the book of Galatians, is the idea of liberty. He carries on his thought, Paul carries on his thought from the previous section of Galatians, the thought of Abraham, and how through Abraham the promise has been made known to us. And that Abraham was not redeemed and was not set as being righteous before God on the basis of what he did, but on the basis of his faith. And so we saw in verse 6 that even so, Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. And we also see in the very fact of this previous one that there is no one that can be justified by law. In verse 11 he says, now that no one is justified by law before God is evident, for, and he quotes the Old Testament, the righteous man shall live by faith. And so the law is not of faith. It is on the contrary. If you live the law, you must practice all of them. You shall live by all of the laws. And we looked at that passage of Scripture, and now he carries on that same theme, and that he brings it to another level, a level in which any one of us can understand. He says, I'm speaking in a earthly way. I'm speaking in human terms. I'm speaking in terms that are not theological terms, in terms that you can understand. Isn't it interesting that he says that? And this is one of the most difficult passages of Scripture to interpret in the whole Scriptures. I mean, speaking in terms you can understand, and there's over 300 different interpretations of this one passage of Scripture. Seems like it's a little confusing to me, doesn't it to you? I believe so. Well, let's look first and see that as he speaks in these human terms, he's talking about a covenant, a testimony, a contract. And as he says this, he's not necessarily talking about a last will and testimony of someone's death, and it takes someone dying although that could be implied in here. But he's talking about a contract, and when a contract is made between two human parties, and that relationship is sealed by that contract, ratified by that contract, then it is law-abiding or bounding. It is that you don't add anything to it and you don't take anything away from it. Well, you know, that's true in our case today. If you purchase a house or if you purchase a car and you do it on a note basis, on a loan basis, you sign a contract, they sign a contract, it's signed, it is ratified by those signatures, and it is set that way, and therefore you are under obligation, and they're under obligation by that contract. You don't add anything to it, you don't take anything away from it. I mean, if they could add things to it, or if you could take away from it, you might come along and say, well, I borrowed the money to buy this car for 2 years, but I think I'll take a year off of this note, and I think I'll just pay for a year. I mean, that'd be all right, wouldn't it? But you see, if the other party had that same privilege, they may say, well, you signed a note for 2 years, but we think we'll extend it to 3 years, and we think we'll have you pay for 3 years. You see, once it's signed, once it's ratified, that contract is set. No one adds, no one takes away. He uses that as an illustration and then plunges into an understanding of the basis between the promise and the law. First, let's look at and see that the law did not nullify the promise. The promises were spoken to Abraham and to his seed. And Paul does a little bit of exposition here when he takes from the Old Testament, and he says, notice that it did, that the promises were not to his seeds, plural, but to his seed, singular. It was not to many, it was to one. And he identifies that one as being the Christ, which was a very good Jewish understanding. I mean, that's what the seed of Abraham was Isaac. And so the Jews may say, well, it's not seed, it's seeds. But you ask any Jew and you say, well, let me ask you this. Are you a descendant of Isaac or are you a descendant of Ishmael? Because both of them are seeds of Abraham. And a Jew will say, well, we're not descendants of Ishmael. We're descendants of Isaac. And then you say, okay, well, let me ask you this. Are you a descendant of Jacob or are you a descendant of Esau? And they say, oh, well, we're descendants of Jacob. We're not descendants of Esau. You see, they did understand that the seed, singular, was down through the ages. There was a seed that finally the promise was there. The Christ, the Messiah. Now, it's interesting because as we look at that concept, many people were claiming to follow the law and saying the law was what brought you into a correct, righteous relationship with God. The law was. So whether it was circumcision or following the Mosaic law, it was what brought you into a correct relationship with God. But Paul takes and he argues that the law did not nullify the promise because historically, Abraham was not under the law because the law came 430 years after Abraham. So if you're saying that you're made righteous or brought correctly before God into a relationship with Him based upon what you do, based upon the law of God, what He says in His law, then what about Abraham? Abraham was not under the law. Abraham didn't even have the law. And yet for Abraham, he was considered righteous because of his faith. So the promise was to Abraham, not to Moses. The promise was for Abraham, and through Abraham would come the seed, the promise. Moses brought the law. Paul's argument is from history showing that the promise had priority because it came first. Now follow me along with this. I know it's kind of deep at a moment of time here, but follow me along, okay? Because it's really important that you follow this. The promise had priority because it came first. People were relating their life and their relationship with Christ to Moses and to the law. Paul takes them back further in history and says, no, if you're going to go to Moses and the law, let's go all the way back to the father of the faith, the father of the Jewish faith, and say, Abraham. Now, how was Abraham made right with God? By the law? No. We all claim, and he would be saying this as a Jew, we claim as Jews that we have an inheritance from God based upon Abraham, not based upon Moses. A Jew would say, we have an inheritance based upon the promises that were given to Abraham. I will bless you, I will bless those that bless you, I will curse those that curse you. You will be given all of this land, you and all of your descendants will be given this land. And by the way, you know, Ishmael and Isaac are still fighting over that land over there. I mean, you know, now then it's called Israel and Arabs. You know, they're still fighting over the land over there. They're still arguing over whose land it is. And the Jews are still holding on to the fact that they're saying, hey, it's our land. Why? Because Abraham. See, they're relating their physical possession to the blessings of Abraham. And the Jews at this time were doing the same thing. They were saying, this is our land because of the promises to Abraham. But this is our relationship with Christ based on what, or this is our relationship with God based upon what Moses said. You see the difference. There's a distinction there. We're saying, wait a minute, I'm getting blessings from Abraham in one sense of my life, and on the other sense of my life, I'm becoming acceptable before God based upon a law that was given to Moses 430 years after Abraham. Now, how am I really made right before God? Do I go back and refine my relationship with God based upon Abraham or based upon Moses and the law? He argues in this passage of Scripture when he says in verse 17, what I am saying is this. Okay? Listen to me. What I'm saying is this. Here's what I'm trying to say. The law, which came 430 years later, does not invalidate a covenant previously ratified by God so as to nullify the promise. For if the inheritance is based on law, it is no longer based on a promise. But God has granted it to Abraham by means of a promise. God granted it to Abraham. The word granted in the Greek language comes from the root of that word is the word grace. It is the choice of God to do what he chooses to do. It is his free will bestowing an acceptance, a relationship with someone else. And so what Paul is doing in simple language is he's taking these people back to a historical point and saying, Abraham was not declared righteous because he did something. Abraham was declared righteous because he had faith in God. He was not declared righteous after he left his country, after he tried to sacrifice Isaac, after these things. He was not declared righteous after those things. He was declared righteous before those things. He was declared righteous because of his belief, because of his faith in God. The Jews of this day, of Galatia, were trying to impart to these people in Christianity that it is by Christ, the Messiah, yes, by the Messiah, but it is also by the law. It is also your acceptance before God by what you do. And Paul is straightening this out by historical perspective and saying, no, history shows that it is a promise, not a law, that makes the difference in your relationship with God. Now, who made this promise? Who made this promise? God made this promise. You see, he says a covenant between two people takes a mediator, and a mediator can't be on either side. A mediator is someone who hears both stories. That's a counselor is a mediator in a sense. You know, you take a good counselor, and a husband and wife comes into a good counselor, and they start telling their problem. A good counselor is able to listen to what both parties are saying, be unbiased about it, and make a rational decision, and bring mediation between the two. Now, if you don't have a gift of counseling. If you have a gift of mercy, then it's whoever has the saddest story is the truth teller. You understand? If you have the gift of mercy, whoever sheds the most tears, tells the saddest story, the other person's a jerk, wrong, should not be, ought to change completely. But in mediation of this type of covenant, he's talking about a mediator serves between two, but God is only one. He's saying, who made this covenant? Did Abraham make this covenant with God? No. God made this covenant with Abraham. God granted it to Abraham. God chose in his own free will to make a blessing upon Abraham apart from what Abraham ever did. I mean, we don't know anything about Abraham before God said, Abraham, leave Ur. And Abraham said, okay. Now, I mean, we have to stop and think about this. He was not raised, I mean, this was not a religious society. I mean, in the idea of what we understand Christianity being, or Judaism being. Abraham was not a Jew before. Realize that? He's the father of the Jews. Before he was a Jew, he was a pagan. He lived in a society that worshipped gods, that worshipped all kinds of things. And out of the midst of this society, God looked down and he made a covenant. He ratified a covenant upon his own self, a promise to Abraham, before Abraham ever did anything. And Abraham did not participate in this covenant. Abraham didn't say, well, God, I'll tell you what, I'll leave Ur if you'll make sure that you give me the land I want when I get there. You know, I'll leave Ur and I'll go to the fertile land. I'll leave Ur and I'll go here and I'll go there. He just said, leave Ur. He just told him what direction to go. He didn't even tell him where he was going. He just said, go. And Abraham did it. And the whole point was, because of his faith, we ratify the promise of God. Because of his faith, it was reckoned to him as righteousness, as a correct standing before God. The law was temporary and inferior to the promise. It was added to the promise. And he says, why was it added? Well, it was added because of transgressions. Different understandings of why that really means because of transgressions. Again, I mean, boy, you're talking about some difficulty here. What does it mean? It was added because of transgressions. Well, one aspect might say that it was to restrain transgressions. That it was there to restrain it, to keep it from going further. So that the law was there to say, thou shalt, or thou shalt not, in order to keep from going any further into sin. Another may come along and say, was there because of transgressions. The law was there because of transgressions, in that it caused transgressions. It made people want to sin. It's the idea that if you tell somebody don't do something, they want to do it. You know, it's the idea of the garden. You can eat of any tree. You can do anything here you want to do. Just don't eat of that one tree. Just don't do that one. That one thing don't do. Well, because of that don't do, there was a desire to do it. And that's, some people would say that's why the law was put there, is to it does the desire, it drives the sin within us. But I think probably the aspect of this passage of Scripture is that the law was added in order to reveal or to expose sin. I know y'all have heard my stories about how I drive sometimes. And I remember one time that I received a ticket, an invitation to pay some money to the state. And I thought I was outside of the city limits, and the speed limit was 65 at that place. And when the policeman stopped me, and I said, well, I thought I was outside the city limits, and I thought the speed limit was 65. And he pointed, and just about 150 yards up there was a sign that said 65. And he said, no, you're about a little before that. There's the sign up there. Well, you see, the sign was there to reveal where I had sinned, where I had broken the law. You know, what do? You go back and you say, well, that sign way back there, now that sign said 55. And that sign up there says 65, so in between that sign and that sign, you can only go 55 miles an hour. If you do any more than that, you're breaking the law. The law is there to reveal when I have broken the law. When you see a speed limit sign on the highway and it says 70 miles an hour, it's not telling you you have to go 70 miles an hour, is it? You can go slower than that and the policeman won't do anything. I just don't think that's fair, but it's true. If you go faster than that, he stops you. If you go slower than that, see, the law is there to show you when you've done wrong. That's what the law of God has done in our lives. And that's what Paul is saying. Is the law contrary to the promise? No. It complements the promise. The promise was first, and then the law came, and the law came to show us how we will never live up to the expectations of a holy God's law. And it will drive us to the point of grace and acceptance under the basis of Christ. And that's what he's saying in this passage of Scripture. The law does not contradict the promises of God. He says it was added because of transgressions. It was ordained through angels by the agency of a mediator until the seed should come. It was temporary in that it was until the seed should come, and then the law was to be of an illustration after that. He talks about the mediator in verse 20, that a mediator is not for one party but two, and God is only one. And then he asks the question, is the law contrary to the promise? No. If there would have been a law that had been given, which was able to impart life, then righteousness would indeed have been based on law. Now here's what he's trying to drive home. For a long time, I know in my own theology, I was taught and thought that people of the Old Testament were saved because they did the law. But the Bible teaches that the law does not bring righteousness. Doing the law, even in the Old Testament, never brought anybody righteousness. It never made anyone righteous doing something. They had belief. They had faith in God. That's what brought righteousness. And he says in verse 22, the Scripture has shut up all men under sin. Now, he didn't say the law. He said the Scripture. All of the Scripture, which the law is embedded in, but the Scripture of God, the voice of God, has shut up, has put all men into a prison house, into a bondage, identifying it as sin. You know, in any time I've talked with anyone about salvation in Jesus Christ, I've never had a problem. I've never met anyone who has thought that they've never done anything wrong. Have you ever met anyone that thought they've never done anything wrong? Now, they may think they're perfect now. Yeah, I've met some people who think that they're perfect now. But have you ever met anyone who Have you ever done anything wrong? I mean, have you ever lied? Have you ever stolen anything? I mean, even as a child, have you ever done anything wrong? I have yet to meet anyone who said, well, I've never done anything wrong in my entire life. Everybody admits I've done something wrong. The Scripture has identified a prison house that all human beings are in, and it's a prison house called sin. And the way that we try to get out of that prison in our own nature is to do something to work our way out of that prison, to work our way to get the jailer to open the bars so that we can get out of the prison, so that we won't be shut up in sin, under that sin, under the weight of that sin. And so whenever something happens and we sin, it's not just because we live in America that we have a penitence mentality. You see, if you go to the other cultures of the world, no matter what their religion is, they have a penitence mentality. That is, whenever they feel like they've done something wrong, they go to whomever they worship, to their gods, and they do something to try to make it right. See, that's our very nature. And what the Jews were doing was they were taking what Moses had said, the law, and then they began to emphasize the law over the promise. And they began to emphasize the fact that you're supposed to do these things rather than just be in the promise of God. And doing these things made you right with God. Paul comes along and says, no, the Scripture has shut up all men under sin that the promise by faith in Jesus Christ might be given to those who believe. Might be given. Not earned. Given. I don't think we can ever hear this enough, because it is the gospel. It is the gospel of Jesus Christ that you don't earn your righteousness with Him. That you don't earn your salvation with Him. It is given. It is granted. It is bestowed upon you. And by faith, it is appropriated, and you are reckoned in your relationship with God in a correct standing with Him. No longer do you try to do penance for what you've done wrong, because Jesus Christ has already paid the price. And so even now, whenever I understand I've done something wrong, I mean, you know, let's just take a poll real quick here. How many of y'all has done something wrong this week? Huh? Go ahead. All right. Come on. Yeah. Every single one of us. Why? Because it is within our sin nature. Now, when we've done something wrong, do we now go to the law of Moses or to the law of New Testament and try and correct what we've done wrong so that we can become righteous before God again? Or do we go all the way back to the beginning, to the promise? To the promise that, hey, you're already reckoned as being righteous before God. That's the promise. The promise is found before the law. And the promise is what makes us right before God, not the law. The promise has priority over the law. It does not go contradictory to the law, but it has a purpose that's different. The law has a purpose that's different. And whenever we try to blend these two together and make one, it is almost like one author said, and I know he was taking this from a previous presidential race, it is almost as if we are trying to make Jesus a kinder and gentler Moses. See, so many people were trying to follow the Mosaic law to be right with God. And now then they think that Jesus is just a kinder and gentler Moses, meaning that, oh, he understands when you failed. Oh, you don't have to, you know, but you still have to do something to be right with God. And Paul says the only thing is faith. That brings the promise, not the law. The law's beneficiary. Yes, the law is beneficial. The law helps us hold structure to society. The law helps us hold morality high. The law helps us hold the character of God high. But the law never makes us acceptable to God. The promise does. The promise that was initiated by God Himself, that was mediated by God Himself, nobody else involved in it. And all we do is accept it. And He accepts us. That's the promise. And it's a wonderful, wonderful promise. That's unlike our promises. Whenever we promise, we may break our promise. But God cannot lie and can never break His promise. And when He promised to Abraham that in his seed there would be righteousness reckoned on the basis of faith, that promise stands true to us today. Because we are part of His seed based on faith. And His righteousness, the righteousness of God, is reckoned to me and it's reckoned to you through the person of Jesus Christ. We are grateful.